title is Reevaluating Result Without Veneration, Mystification, / Mystification. Which is obviously a takeoff from Renato Constantino's essay, Veneration Without Understanding. And since veneration has always been the industry pertinent to Cezanne, like we experienced yesterday, I would like to invite you to go back to the text of Rizal and let's find out what ideas were being percolated in his mind at the time when the crisis in Spain as well as in the Philippines was already grinding the lives of so many people. Some points here I have already mentioned yesterday in my reaction to some panels there, so I can read this fast. During the centennial commemoration of Dr. Jose Rizal's birth in 1961, the National Historical Institute published a volume of fragmentary quotations from the prolific pen of the martyr. More than half of the entries in this inventory was unfinished and unpublished drafts, which the book annotator carefully described respectively as marked by Rizal with various deletions or corrections or outright cancellations, which should indicate to us even now how cautious and rigorous Rizal was in formulating his thoughts as well as his afterthoughts. I am impelled to underline such tentativeness by Rizal's own reckoning of many of his ideas and impressions on account of my observation that for several decades we have been partaking in conferences commemorating his genius and self-sacrifice. Many of us have been trying to insert motives, ill or good, into Rizal's mind and heart. Or we are still trying to redirect his life or reinvent his amor patria, including his inamoradas in various countries, or even re-engineer his gender or his ethno-political identity, and what not. Once I heard one gay advocate expound on Rizal being a closet gay. This is something that Amber mentioned yesterday. I asked for the evidence, and the gay scholar said that in one page of Rizal's drawing pad, supposedly stored in a U.S. university archive, is this sketch of an erect penis. I countered that Rizal took up art studies and produced sculptural works in round and freestanding. Would this not explain why he was interested in the visual form of an erect penis instead of a sleeping house? My demand for basic logic was quickly resolved by this dogmatic retort. Well, since you are not gay, you shouldn't talk your nose into gay discourse. To my mind, such brash retort is disrespectful of logic and is thus an instant of mystification towards Rip Rizal as a gay, regardless of the paucity of evidence. Rizal's afterlife identity or religious affiliation is even more surprising in Malaysia, where I was told by an eminent writer and scholar in Malay studies that Rizal was a Muslim, and a Haji at that, meaning he had undertaken the pilgrimage to Mecca, one of the five pillars of Islam. This Muslim depiction of Rizal should easily explain why he has been highly esteemed or venerated in that country, which conducted an international conference on Rizal more than a decade ago. So I told the Malaysian scholar that such a revaluation of Rizal seemed to be rooted in the fact that for any citizen to be officially regarded as a Malay in Malaysia is, first and foremost, to be Muslim. And since Rizal has been frequently tagged as Malay or Malayan, despite the fact that the Filipino historian Gregorio Saider had documented Rizal's family tree as Chinese-Japanese and progeny, this dubious mislabeling might be the sole consideration of his alleged secret and undocumented Muslim affiliation. So I asked if he had a travel visa to Makkah. The Malaysian scholar said Rizal was pilgriming incognito because he didn't want to provoke the ire of his Spanish warden in Vietnam. And with such an apprehensive, the scholar revealed more dramatic details of Rizal's alleged sudden escape from his place of exile in Mindanao, that the two Moros who were his medical patients helped him sneak to Sandaman, and then to Singapore, then Aden, to Port of Aden, and then Macau. I was also reminded about Rizal's plan to establish a farm colony in Sandaman, North Borneo, now state of Sabah in Malaysia, for which he got permission from the British consul in charge of the territory. And Rizal himself had indeed written to his sisters the details of such a project to help the beleaguered Kalamba farmers oppressed by the land-grabbing priors in Kalamba Laguna seek refuge and productive peaceful life in Sandaran. Surely, whether Rizal's project in an Islamic domain like Sandaran turn out to be a success or a failure would not make him a Muslim nor a Haji. Such ethno-religious identity tagged on him is a clear case of creative mystification, co-veneration, that only serves the pro-Malay racial politics in Malaysia called Bumi Putra. Memorializing Rizal as a so-called Malay Muslim reinvents his stature into becoming misappropriated as a prime founding father of Malaysian nation building. Well, that's what the Malaysians try to do, but I'm just describing the process as mystification. Now we go to the misty Malay race as pertaining to Rizal. The documented fact is that Rizal had a baptismal certificate as a son of Catholic parents and state warden in Port Santiago on this last night described him as a mestizo Chinese in the official form prior to his execution. And should be relied on the documentary analysis by Seidler regarding Rizal's pedigree, he was descended from Chinese and Japanese ancestors who had migrated to Las Islas Philippines. What then makes him fit the label pride of the Malay race, or the Great Malayan, as popularized by his biographers? This apparent mystique in semantics, actually I call it the semantic mirage, is on account of the intrinsic ambiguity of the term Malay, a very vague term Rizal first imbibed from the Spanish prior's usage while he was yet studying in Islas Filipinas. And then, from the European scholars he corresponded with, or whose books he had read. In his own writings, the Malayan racial type is a strongman, stereotype of the duality of the Oriental character, gentle and gracious most times, but densely violent when provoked. That is the stereotype of Malay in his writings. In his essay, The Philippines a Century Hence, published in La Solidaridad 1889, Rizal explicated like an impressionist painter. The peoples of the Orient, open quote, the peoples of the Orient in general, and the Malayans in particular, are notable for their sensitiveness. In them predominates a nice sensibility of feeling. Even today, despite the contact with Western nations, whose ideals are distinct from theirs, we see the Malayan Filipinos sacrifice everything on the altar of an aspiration, of a vanity, be it religious, scientific, or of any other character whatsoever. But at the slightest injury to his amor proprio, he forgets all his sacrifices and never forgets the offense he believes he has received. End of quote. That is Rizal's depiction of the Malay psyche and the area. However, In his essay, The Indolence of Filipinos, published the same last year, that Rizal's concept of Raftan Malaya was very, very expansive and might surprise you. His description of Raftan Malaya was so encompassing because it includes los Japones, los Cambodians, los Siamese, he therefore New York. So at least to the Thai, to the Cambodians, to those in Borneo are Malays, as far as he is trying to deploy the term Malay. It is my conjecture that in this multi-ethnic usage of Malay, he was inspired by the ideas of Johann Herder, a pioneer thinker, German thinker, in European Romanticism, whose famous quip was, open quote, Herder's quip, "We live in a world we ourselves create," end quote, that's Herder, which can be interpreted to mean that the culture of a nation is not designed by divine order, nor by racial composition, but by the quote unquote expressive power of human nature. Across the whole world, according to Herder, different cultures have developed due to the creative determinants from history, geography, climate, and literature. Rizal discerned in this worldview of Herder the requisites of cultural nationalism that had little room for a racist mindset, especially the racial superiority espoused by the priors in the Philippines. I'd like to go deeper into this very important view of Herder that was inspiring to Rizal. Remember that the Germans were the barbarians, the savages. During the Roman Empire, it was the Germans, the Visigoths, the Visigoths, that were destroying the troops of the Romans. And yet, the Romans were supposed to be the most civilized people and most cosmopolitan. So, Herder, being a German, had to look. He was writing in the 1700s. In the 1700s, the French were trying to cut off the heads of their kings and queens because of the revolution. So, while the French were trying to destroy the mythology of the divine rights of kings by just cutting off their heads, the Germans, like Herder, were trying to come up with a new seedbed of culture. Since they are not Romans, since they are not Greeks, then the German tribes, the German savages, must have come from a very important, strong culture also. So, according to Herder, pwede na yung Persia and India. Or later on, in the 1900s, Hitler's thinkers depicted it as Aryan race, the Aryan. Pero that was already in the 1900s. In the 1700s, Herder was creatively proposing that the ancestry of the Germanic peoples na, Germanic, come from Persia and India. And so at that time, Herder and his cohorts were translating the great literature of the Persians, you know, Gilgamesh, they were translating into German the great literature of the Indians. So they can get away from the racial superiority of the Romans, of the Greeks, and then come up with a new system of cultural renaissance of their own. So, maganda kay Rizal yun. Ang mga Pilipinas, ang dami-dami ethnic communities, tribal communities, and hunters. So, he also followed that idea of multi-ethnic, multilingual kind of nation building as long as there is a common bonding for all this. And to Rizal, that common bonding is the concept of one nation. That concept of one nation and led by educated, very specific, educated people in the Philippines called Sinoverbius Gallus. Okay. Rizal was very delighted in informing Blumentritt. Of course, you know that Blumentritt was his grandfather, quote unquote, no? When it comes to scholastic scholarly studies. He informed Blumentritt that he had acquired the volumes of Herder, which were inspiring him to envision a unified new nation in the making, a Filipinas in progress. When he bade goodbye to the Spain-based Indian brothers in 1883, to move home in his travels and studies, his most impassioned insight was, "My lips had forgotten the names of the native races in the Philippines, in order not to say more than Filipinos." So he can forget every name, the ethnic, regional ethnicity in the Philippines, for as long as the term Filipinos will emerge. But yesterday, you know this, I already shared the thought that it was Padre Burgos, 2 decades before him, that made the term Filipinos refer to everyone in Las Islas Filipinas. In other words, they already radically changed, the radicals at the time, changed the concept, the meaning of Filipinos, which was supposed to be referring to Spaniards or Filipinos. But during Padre Burgos time and his writings, he was already talking of Filipinos indígenas, Filipinos españoles, and Filipinos del país, of the country. So everyone was already a member of the society of Filipinos. In other words, the term Filipinas already refers to the island, not to the dominion of the Spaniards in these islands, like Ibarra and Puerto Cayrens. But this was no epiphany unique to Rizal. Such emergence of the idea of identifying as Filipinos all the inhabitants of Las Islas Filipinas, and not by another label like, say, Tagalog, which was to be used later by Andres Bonifacio, may be traced to the writings of Padre Jose Burgos. In his excoriating arguments against the racist friars published in periodicals in Spain, Burgos was consistently calling the inhabitants of the entire archipelago as Filipinos, Filipinos indígenas, Filipinos españoles, or Filipinos del país. It cannot be doubted that the execution of the secular priest Jose Burgos, Mariano Gomez, and Jacinto Zamora in 1872 was a spark leading to the bonfire of Filipino nationalism and the people's desire for independence, and this was implied by Rizal even as a young boy. Rizal did not invent Filipinism and nationalism. He got it from the tradition of the oppositionists since Padre Burgos' time. Worthwhile recalling at this juncture is the sampling declaration of Rizal in his 1889 letter to his compatriots in Barcelona. Open quote, "Without 1872, that was the Gomorosa Martyr, there would not now be a Claridel, a Paena, a Sanchanco, nor would the brave and generous Filipino colonies exist in Europe," meaning Yungong Indus Brothers. "Without 1872, Rizal would now be a Jesuit. Instead of writing Nolini Tamere, would have written the contrary." End quote. Consequently, Rizal would dedicate his second novel, El Ilustrismo, to the Gomorosa Martyrs, and fittingly so, because it was this novel that dealt on the motives and prospects of the revolutionists. In fact, the 1872 insurrection, for such was the precise term used by the Spanish Governor General Rafael de Izquierdo, was propelled by, open quote, "las ideas de independencia," end quote, to cite the exact words of Sciarro in his confidential report to the overseas minister in Spain. Incidentally, one should not fail to know that the so-called campaign for secularization, quote-unquote, of the churches and parishes, as popularly used by many Filipino historians, was a misnomer, was a prior propaganda. Kasi nung sinabi mo, secularization movement lang na. Meaning that secular priests like Bogotá are just trying to amass more privileges to themselves and empower themselves. That is not the case. It was prior propaganda which got into our textbooks in history. Because even the Governor General at that time called it a fight for independence. And even this Governor General even lamented that the problem with our educational system in our universities is that we graduate too many priests and too many lawyers. And the first thing this first graduate priest and lawyer would like to do is kick us out of the Philippines. That is supposed to be the problem according to the Governor General. And it's true that the graduates at that time, even in 1860s, hindi pa pinananakay, kapapanganak pa lang si Rizal, the ideas of independence, separatism, and Philippinism was already very much a big bonfire throughout the cities of Las Islas, Filipinas. I would not be able to go to the other points, but let me, since I'm trying to show how Rizal generated his ideas from his, let's say, travels in Europe, and then later on America, and Japan, and Vietnam. The beautiful thing about Rizal is that he was so compulsive, a learner, and a traveler, and he was a very cute guy. He could speak many languages. So he was very friendly with girls and some boys. But the further he traveled across the oceans, globe-trotting, at that time, he had to imbibe so many ideas from Europe, because Europe was the intellectual seedbed, the intellectual fermentation of the world at that time. To be an intellectual is to be Europeanized. In fact, Padre Burgos, when he was attacking the friars for their presumptions and their insults against the Filipinos, Padre Burgos himself was citing the French intellectuals, the British intellectuals, all these authoritative sourcing of his ideas. Padre Burgos, yun, ha? E si Rizal mismo, ganun din, he had to really marinate his mind in the European intellectual circles. At that time, if you remember, 1800s, Europe was bustling with intellectual activities, with inventions, with discoveries anywhere in the world. In 1800, Darwin was going to the Galapagos, and Alfred Russel Wallace was going throughout Asia, and both were trying to prove that evolutionism is a fact of life. That was Europe then. Now, it's not only the evolution of the species, but Europe was generating a big evolution of ideas, and Rizal had to get that. And that is the kind of an educated person that Rizal thought would be leading the revolution. Not yung mga mambang, not yung mga obrera na wala pang patuloy ng tarif. Kaya nga sa ating Rizal, we have to get the rich to support the revolution, because if not, they will be your enemies and all that. In the chill of autumn 1890, while he was traveling, he let his homebound thoughts burst forth through an essay, Love of 90, published in Asuterra, that can be summed up in these poignant lines, open quote, Rizal's lines. Love of country is never the place once it has penetrated the heart. because it carries with it a divine stamp which renders it eternal and imperishable. It has been said that love is the most powerful force behind the most sublime actions. Well then, among all loves, that of country is the greatest, the most heroic, and the most disinterested and dedicated. Thank you.